Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I talked to the great Matt Moore at HP Basketball on Twitter about the Denver Nuggets as part of our Under the Bubble series, and also pepper him with questions about the Cavs because Matt's really smart and I like picking smart people's brains. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Joining us now is the great Matt Moore on Twitter at HP Basketball. You can find him at places like the Action Network, Locked On Nuggets, and all over the internet. Matt, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you guys?
Doing good. Evan, I guess, where are you at today?
I'm not doing too bad. I was working on a cup of Cavs for Fear the Sword earlier, and I included a very nice picture for Tumbleweed for Cavs News. So, I mean, it's been a pretty uneventful day for the Cavaliers, but
yeah,
bum about Jonathan Isaac, but Michael Porter Jr., wow, he had a good day today for the Nuggets.
Yeah, man, let's kind of just start there. What has it, for you primarily covering Denver, what has it been like? Considering, like, not just Michael Porter Jr. kind of blossoming, but the things he said, and then all the kind of wondering about Jokic and his status, obviously, because he came down with coronavirus and had his delayed entry into the bubble and everything. And, you know, I know, like, Monty Morris was another guy that they weren't sure quite what was going on with him. What has it just been like covering a team that is in the bubble and hasn't exactly had, like, a clean path into things?
Infuriating. It's been absolutely infuriating. A lot of it is just that, you know, the Nuggets as a whole, it's not a very leaky organization. They keep things pretty buttoned up. Now, they're congenial with the media and they're professional and you can work with them on certain things, but they are also paranoid and they're also restrictive, but they're also like, they're very not dramatic. So what I mean by that, when I'm talking about this, is like people inside the organization. So if you're like, hey, like, where's Nikola? Like, there was a 4-day period where no one knew where Nikola and Jokic was. Like, front office knew, but they weren't saying. And like, everyone's like, I'm getting eyes on radio. It's like, Matt, where the hell is Jokic? I'm like, I don't know. I'd love to tell you. I was like, he's not. I would say things like, well, I have reason to believe he's not in Serbia, and have reason to believe he's not in Orlando. So he's somewhere in between. And then there was like a day where he popped up, and somebody took a photo with him in the Chicago airport, and he landed on like. And so it was like he should have been on Saturday night. Malone was like, oh, it was like we're expecting a big surprise from Europe, and he was like, okay, so Jokic is getting in.
Right.
And then Sunday it was nope, nothing to report, and it was like. No. and so I'm hammering people. I'm like, look, I have to be able to relate something. And they're like, well, you can make your own deductions. And I was like, yes, but that's the whole point of me talking to you. So yeah. Not miscommunication. Because if I go out there and I say the wrong thing, there's a lot of confusion about it. Part of the thing that hasn't really gotten talked about is just like how many positives they had. And that's been a thing across the league because there were a lot of positives. Like, there were just a lot of positive tests before they got down to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, because everyone was worried about them catching it there. And it turns out the bigger threat was them, you know, being NBA players and 20-year-old millionaires where they live. That was, like, a big part of it was the Nuggets. Like, I always thought it was really funny that, like, Jamal Murray was there. He already had it and caught it and then got better. That was, like, he was one of the first ones to catch it. And then the rest of the guys in Orlando immediately were Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Mason Plumlee, the veterans. Like, those guys were there. Like, they were there and had not been exposed and had taken care of things and had probably socially distanced responsibly. And then Gary Harris, Monte Morris, Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic, on and on and on and on and on. All of those guys suspiciously not there. So, you know, I'm not saying – and there's not like a one-to-one correlation. Like, you can catch this thing anywhere and catch it at the grocery store, at the doctor's office, post office, wherever. But it was kind of funny to me, like the veterans definitely like did whatever was necessary to make sure that they could go. And then everybody else was like making different decisions about what they would do. And so, yeah, now they're in a really bad spot because the players that have been there are overworked because there was nobody else to practice or to play in the scrimmages. And so Will Barton and Jamal Murray are banged up, and Gary Harris got there late. And then because he wasn't conditioned, they tried to do too much with him and he got hurt. And so like you have this two-way thing. The guys that were late aren't in condition, and the guys that were there early are all worn out. So the Nuggets are in a pretty rough spot right now.
I guess just my question is for you. When the bubble went underway, and this has just been my question, because I asked Renee Washington, the host of Locked On Wizards, about this. What was your initial reaction to Mike Malone just kind of going all big against the Wizards? Like it was a welcome return for NBA Twitter in my eyes, because everyone was kind of having an overreaction to it. And I'm curious what your thoughts were on that situation.
I think my reaction was mostly I knew that he was doing this out of force, that he just simply did not have the bodies. But on some level, he could have manufactured something that was a little bit more normal. He could have played different guys. He could have played Troy Daniels and just been like, we're playing Troy Daniels 40 minutes because he's one of our only two guards. But he didn't do that. You know, he was willing to basically – like he was willing to mess around a little bit and go with this insane lineup to see what it does. A lot of it with Malone is he often gets to the right decision, but only when he's forced to. And so like playing Bol Bol is probably not something that he wanted to do, but he was definitely forced to do so. And now it's like, man, we got a real prospect there. Like that kid gets really good and he can really do stuff. And like today is another good example of Michael Moore Jr. was horrible in their first game in the bubble. Terrible. And then versus the Heat, but he's got no other wings. So he has to start him, and then he goes out and he has 35 points tonight. So I think Malone a lot of times will eventually turn to things out of desperation, but he's also like he won't go down with the ship so much that he rejects better options. It just takes him a long time in certain conditions to get there.
With Michael Porter Jr. in particular, just he's obviously been a source of fascination just because the talent's so clearly there, and he's been brought along a little bit slowly. I mean, what is the root cause of Michael Malone not like just being all, like throwing him into this deep end right away this season? It kind of taking a little bit of prying to get him on the floor in large doses.
So I think part of it was, one was the injuries. Like you have to be really cautious with him. Like you just have to be really cautious with him considering his situation. The second part of it is, you have this veteran team that's won games. Like they won the second most games in the Western Conference last season, and they were a game seven away from the Western Conference Finals. You cannot in this industry, in this business, in this league, you cannot just be like, but yeah, we're going to play him because he's more talented. Like at some level you have to like those other guys, the other guys that he would be leapfrogging have egos, and those guys also have agents, and there are repercussions to these things. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it, I genuinely believe this, and after talking to some people in the organization, there is an understanding that he's going to be a star, that he's going to be a legitimate, like if he's healthy, he's going to be a star. And so you want to instill the right concepts now. You want to make sure that like if he's got a tough learning curve, it's now, because there will come a point very quickly where he won't listen to Malone anymore because he doesn't need to because he's too good. Like that happens with most NBA players. Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to instill in him is an understanding of the concepts and the value of defense and the value of moving the ball and like radically not giving into like the urges. Cause I think this is part of it is if you're untethered as a rookie, it means you have to make a lot of mistakes and you can learn from them. It's also hard to have constructive criticism because the coach can't take you off the floor because there's no one better than you. And like, that's the whole point of this team is just like to get you better versus he's in a position where you can say, no, like we're trying to win a title. And if you can help us, awesome. Like we want that for you. That's why we drafted you. But you're going to have to execute all of the things that we need you to.
You mentioned guys with the egos and the head and the pecking order on Denver's rotation. Will Barton's out right now. I think he's either day to day, but he was considered very questionable for Monday's game against Oklahoma City. Do you think that Will Barton will, or let me just say it this way, do you think Michael Porter Jr. is more or less cementing himself as the starting three for Denver? Or do you think Will Barton will just come right back in as the starter and then you push Michael Porter back to the bench?
I think he'll come right back. I think Barton absolutely gets back. One, Barton's was great this season. He has confidence completely shook. And he was hurt last year and it was really rough for him. And there was supposed to be this open competition for the three spot and he just came in and dominated and was just better than everybody. And then he was really good to start the season. This is Will's best defensive season. This is Will's best passing season. This is Will's best impact season. He carries a lot of weight in the locker room as an emotional leader. There's just a lot of reasons why Will Barton mm-hmm. will start. I think long term, I've said from months and months that I think Michael Porter Jr. starts at the three no matter what next season. But okay. I also think that there's going to be a trade, and then I think it's possible that Will Barton starts at the two or is moved. So that's a different point, though. As of now, MPJ is definitely going back to the bench, and that's going to be weird. And there's going to be talk here in Denver about, like, he just had 35 points. What mm-hmm. are you doing?
That's why I asked, because there might be a little bit of, like, recency bias just because he had such a monster game against the Thunder tonight.
Yeah, but that's like the opposite of how Malone will approach it. And there will just be, like, there will be a firm understanding. And, like, to be honest, MPJ won't complain. Because part of this, too, is – as long as he gets minutes, he doesn't care. He gets upset when he doesn't get minutes. And he got jerked around with his minutes a lot this season because Malone, one, was trying to teach him lessons, and two, has a lot of guys he has to manage, and three, he's stubborn-headed about some things. Like, there was a conflict earlier in the season that I feel comfortable saying was, like, he and the front office were in a pissing contest over MPJ. Like, they just were. Mm. Like, that's just – it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure some of this stuff out. And Malone and the front office have a really good relationship with everybody, like even Arturas, who's now in Chicago. Like, they have a really good synergy between them. But there are still tension points, and MPJ was one of them because the front office is like, he's possibly the second best player on the team. And Malone's like, yes, but we have a whole thing here. We're trying to build a team. And so it's complicated and messy, but I think ultimately this was the one season that he knows he can do that. Because again, I think Malone, given his experiences with various superstars, knows that next season he's starting, and after that point, everything changes.
Gotcha.
Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at CBDMD. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friend CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. And CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need when it matters most. To make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code MBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code MBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Again, promo code MBA.
Matt, what are your actual expectations for the Nuggets in the bubble? All things considered, everything you know about this team before they got here, how they've looked so far, like, what are you actually expecting out of them now that we've seen them play a little bit?
Oh, boy. So today's a really good example of this. They beat the Thunder today, come back, win in overtime. They were still without Murray. They were still without Harris. They were still without Barton. They're down three starters. Mason Plumlee's on, like, he's completely gassed. They had to play Michael Porter Jr. like 40-plus minutes, which is insane for that kid, and had to be giving the front office heart attacks. But they won because they're stubborn as hell. This team responds the best when there's adversity. They have always been a team that if they're down guys, if they're up against the wall, if they got to get the game, that's a fuck. And that's a credit to them considering how young they are. Now, game 7 versus Portland, they were not prepared for the Myers Leonard, Evan Turner haymaker that they received. But in general, that's how they respond. I think I tend to believe that, like, adversity breeds chemistry and it helps and instills confidence. So I think honestly, like, this is a good experience for them. It would be way worse if they just, like, got everybody back and they just kind of coasted and went like 5-3 or 4-4, and it was fine. Now it's like an uphill battle, and like, you know, they're in a bunker mentality, and that's what they need. I do worry about them staying healthy. You know, Mason Plumlee, Paul Millsap, those guys look gassed. Like, they're just tired. They've just done a lot of work. And so they need to get back fully healthy. I think it'd be good to see him go back to Bol Bol a little bit more throughout the game. I think that'd be a good thing for him to do. He needs to go deeper into his rotation. Like, part of it with Malone is that he will say things like, no, we're not really worried about seeding, and we're just going to, you know, our health is the biggest thing for us. And then he'll play like seven dudes. And so, like, he sometimes has a hard time balancing the bigger picture priorities when he's in game because he's so competitive. But in general, I think, look, I thought Jokic looked awesome today. That was a big step forward. He looked great. Today was the first day that he looked like Jokic. I thought that Monte Morris finally looked like he was in shape. Michael Porter Jr. looked great. Paul Millsap looked good. We got to see what happens when they get everybody back healthy. This has actually been the bigger problem, is when they're healthy and they should win, that's when they struggle. Like, they respond to adversity and then they really fail in moments of comfort. So I'm more curious to see what happens when they get everybody back healthy and they should be good. That's a tougher test for them, honestly, than when they're shorthanded.
That makes sense. But I guess in general, then, who do you think is the biggest threat to Denver in terms of just making it a legitimate title? I mean, obviously, like, there are the Clippers and there are the Lakers. Those are probably the easiest answers. But do you think there's maybe a Western Conference team that not a lot of people are keeping their eyes on that could really be a thorn in the Nuggets' side come playoff time?
So I don't think they're going to face Dallas, but that's one that I've been worried about all season. They've shown the ability to, like, they're not going to get swept by Dallas because that would be insane, but also they can put two on ball, and that does give Luka issues. With they put two on ball in the fourth quarter and just pressure Luka, he's not as effective because he's big, but he's not that big, and he's not that good at passing out of that situation. And that puts a lot of pressure on Kristaps Porzingis. That combined with Dallas's absolutely horrendous defense. But I do think that, like, look, if the Nuggets somehow do wind up in the second spot, the Clippers just decide to rest guys and they fall to three, and the Nuggets get the Mavericks, I'm going to be pretty concerned. And as a guy that does betting over at Action Network, I'm going to be looking pretty hard at what the Mavericks odds are, because Rick Carlisle has just kind of ripped apart Michael Malone through the years. So a lot of that's because they were playing drop versus two on ball. But, you know, I think that there are still some issues with the amount of offense Dallas brings to the table. Denver's not a good shooting team, so that's problematic. I think they can beat OKC. I think they can beat Utah. If they were to wind up in a matchup versus Houston, which would probably be in the 4-5 with all things considered, which would be strange, but possible. If they wind up with Houston in the 4-5 or the 3-6, that's still possible, I guess. Then I do think it's going to be a compelling matchup, but I worry a lot about the fact that Denver is maybe the one team that they will just force the switch every single time, and Joker will score over Harden. Like, Rockets fans are very quick to point out how great Harden is a post defense. And it's absolutely true, but he can't do anything if a guy just shoots over him. And that's what Jokic will do. He's like, he won't try and body him. He won't commit an offensive foul. He'll just turn around and do a little drop in shot, and they will do that. Jokic, if he sees that, will do it over and over again. So really, I think it does come down to the Clippers for me. I think Nuggets advance the second round, and I think that they will face the Clippers, and then that's a tough matchup. It's one that I tend to lean a little bit towards Denver in, actually, and I'm not...
Ooh, I like this. I like this take.
Yeah, so I'm not from Denver. Like, I moved here in 2012, and so... Like, I'm not, and there is a natural bias when you cover a team that I'm very aware of, but bear in mind, like, I think that the Nuggets get absolutely stomped by the Lakers. They just get destroyed by LA, the other LA. The Clippers, however, specifically, Ivica Zubac can't handle Jokic. Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell is the only combination that the Nuggets bench can run pick and roll against successfully, maybe in the league. The Clippers actually don't shoot as much from the outside as people think they do. They were actually 16th in 3-point attempts per 100 possession. You need to play the numbers game if you play Denver, because, like, they are very much willing to trade twos with you. If you have hit threes, that's a problem because they don't have 3-point shooters. If Michael Porter Jr. gets minutes, which you would think after today he would get a little bit of a leash, and if they get MPJ as a weapon, that's enough firepower, I think, to really give the Clippers a push to at least get it to six and give them a chance at seven. I don't have as much confidence in the Clippers as everybody else. I am the outlier amongst most analysts who tend to lean towards them, mm-hmm. both for chemistry issues, continuity issues, as well as I'm just not crazy about their team construct. I'm not as high on the Clippers. Now, I think the Clippers could absolutely win the title, but I'm just not as high as everybody else is on them. So I do think Denver at least has a chance versus the Clippers in the second round.
Say it with me. Sports are back, baby. I know we've all been waiting for this day since March, and now I've only got one thing on my mind, and that's MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot, all wrapped up into one. You love it, I love it, and you all should be happy to hear that you can start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on your favorite teams, and with the start of Major League Baseball back now, there's never been an easier time to start playing. With MyBookie, you bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season even kicks into high gear. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, which is back, hockey, which is back, football, we'll see. MyBookie is accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today, and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a free $10 MLB future wager and 100% deposit match.
I like that take a lot. I'm also kind of more towards the Lakers. The chemistry thing, like, having seen some of that play out in Cleveland, like I think it can be real. And I think Denver, just considering like that's the one series where I guess like Michael Porter Jr. is kind of the X factor there, but it's like the one series at the top of the West where like having Kawhi and Paul George just isn't as like it matters, but it's not the same as having to throw the having those guys to guard LeBron or guard Harden and Westbrook or something like it. Just it's not, it's a the it hits different when it's like Torrey Craig, who I love, and we're going to talk about, or and Paul Millsap, as opposed to, you know, LeBron James.
Right. And one thing that was kind of interesting from the regular season, they found this last season too. Jeremy Grant does an exceptional job on Kawhi. So like nobody's going to shut him down. Kawhi will win 2 to 3 games on his own because he's Kawhi Leonard and he's one of the top three best players in the NBA. However, what you want is you need somebody that has length, that has some size, and that can hang with him on the perimeter because of that length, and they can get a hand up in his face with just exceptionally long arms. Jeremy Grant's actually shown a pretty good aptitude at that. And so the question then becomes like, well, what about Paul George? And I'm like, that's a fair question. Torrey Craig doesn't do well against guys that are wings. So he's kind of out. Like Torrey Craig does very well versus point guards. And he does very well versus bigs. He's actually not a great wing defender. So Paul George is probably going to eat in that series. But then I just wonder, like, it's like, oh, but then you got Lou Williams and Marcus Morris. I'm like, I'm not worried about those guys because I think that they have just as much an ability to shoot you out of it, and their defense is going to be questionable. So I think, again, like, it's a tough matchup. If Denver doesn't hit shots, then they're screwed. But that's why this is the thing. Michael Porter Jr. is effectively a rookie. He is a rookie. He didn't play at all last year. Mm-hmm. They are reliant on a rookie being essentially their second best offensive weapon. Like they have a good offense when things are clicking, but it hasn't clicked really in the last year and a half. It just hasn't clicked. And so they need another weapon. And if MPJ isn't that, then they're not going to be able to make it.
That's fair. And I guess I just want to look ahead a little bit with Denver here. You mentioned a possible trade happening, and I feel like I know who you're talking about, especially when you said Will Barton is sliding over to the two. What is going on with Gary Harris? Do you think it's just for the best for both him and the Nuggets for Denver to find him a new home so he can just kind of find confidence in his game again?
No, I think there's still a lot of confidence internally with him. I think that they trust him. I think that the reality is that he had core injuries and they have just severely messed him up. Mm. He tried losing weight in order to compensate for it, to make him lighter so that there wasn't as much strain on it. And they tried, and that didn't work. And they tried bulking up, and then that took away his elevation. And he's just hasn't been able to find rhythm since. He's just habitually injured. And that's a pain. But one thing I try and remind people is that because of where NBA science is now, we don't have as many guys that are just like injury prone, because you take enough treatments and there's enough money built toward fixing your body that unless you have a debilitating injury, like guys have ACL tears and just come back now, like it's just not a thing anymore. It's really only the navicular bone problem, which by the way, MPJ and Ball Ball have that problem. Back problems or something of that sort, like anything else you can kind of work past, or Achilles, everything else you can kind of work past. And so with Harris, I think it really just is a matter of him getting to a place where he's able to get stabilized and then just works out of it. So I think that there's some confidence that he will return to that. The reason though is just if they're going to make a trade, I think there is a realization that the only way that they're going to go forward is they have to make a trade, that they have to take some shots. And truth be told, they took some shots downfield this season. They made calls about various two guards for an upgrade because they're committed to Jamal Murray. They just gave him max money and he's really hard to move. They're committed to Nikola Jokic, and they're probably going to be committed to Michael Porter Jr. at the three or the four. And so the only real spots on the wing. And that's why, like, I would expect the summer, I'm so used to that. I would expect this winter, in the short free agency period, depending what happens with the cap, because there's a lot of stuff going on with the pandemic that we can't predict. But if this were a normal summer, I would have expected them to have gone after Bradley Beal, Drew Holiday, maybe kick the tires on Zach LaVine, though I think that they don't, like, they ultimately don't grade him out well. They are absolutely looking, I think, for a guard upgrade. And so that's kind of the question, is like, how do you build the best set of guys around this team? And I think one thing that they're learning with Jokic is if you put super athletic guys next to him, that's the best way to manage to maximize what he can do. You have to have tall, long, athletic guys, and they've had short guards, and that's honestly a limitation of the team construct.
Yeah, that's I think it's a really interesting way of looking at it. Matt, just because we have to hook in some cap stuff here, because this is a Cavs podcast, even though they're they're a worthless basketball team in a lot of ways right now. Hey, man. Evan, I'll take the blame for that one. Torrey Craig, for me, has become like a point of fascination because, as you know, the Cavs are all born on defense. They have very few players that have pulses on the defensive end of the floor. He's a restricted free agent this upcoming offseason. I wouldn't be able to assume that Denver just logistically would tender him. But A, is he, depending on if the Cavs like use their mid-level to kind of go get him, like, do you think he's someone that they're like absolutely going to match on a two? Do you like the fit of him on a team like Cleveland that is rebuilding a little bit and just kind of needs bodies? Or is that kind of asking too much of what for what he is?
Yeah, no, you should stay away from him. First off, I want to say that Torrey Craig is a complete professional and a really good dude and a quality NBA player. I think that he can absolutely help certain teams. The Cavs are not that team. So the big thing with him is that Torrey's high upside, low floor. And the problem is that when he's on the court, particularly this season, it's like if he's not in the perfect matchup defensively, then he's going to struggle even on the defensive end. Like some of his defensive advance metrics are really bad, even though like there are capable, like if you have a second unit that has Monte Morris, who at least tries, like he's not great, but he tries small, but tries to get over the screen. Mm-hmm. And you have Mason Plumlee, who again, the effort is there. Like Mason sometimes may have bad instincts, but Mason doesn't loaf ever. Like he is a total pro. And then you have Torrey Craig. Like that should be enough for your defense to be fine. And it wasn't, it was bad. The other problem is that offensively, if he like last year in the playoffs versus the Spurs, he shot like 47% from three. And that was a godsend. And like, you're not going to beat the Nuggets if that happens. Like if Torrey Craig's knocking him down, you're screwed. But that just doesn't happen enough. He's such an offensive drag because not only is he not a good spot up shooter, he also can't handle in pick and roll. He can't really pass. He's not an awesome cutter. He has like sometimes he's physical and he's willing to finish inside and he hustles. He does all like the little things, right? Like he's super ultra scrappy, but you have to balance that with some level of like court awareness. Otherwise it's not going to make up for it enough. And you can do that if you have other really smart, engaged defenders on the floor. The Cavaliers don't have any in the state of Ohio.
Well, Larry Nance Jr. objects to that, but yes, sure. Everyone else is a little like, I'm out in space and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Or if you're Kevin Porter Jr., you're fouling the shit out of people at like an insane rate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of questions about like who's going to be where next season. And there's certainly personnel that they can work with. But like, I would be really worried about, I would be genuinely like really concerned about like putting Sexton and him in the same backcourt. Like, I don't think that would work. Or even with him on the wing. Like, I just don't think, and I'm actually relatively higher on Sexton Garland than, I think most people are. Like, I was really impressed with both of them this season. I thought there were real strides made. But the thing is, like, you would be adding a guy because you're like, he can play defense for us. And it's like, yes, if you have a good defense already, like, he makes your good defense even better. Like, the good news is, like, he does things like bugs the hell out of Russell Westbrook. Like, Russell Westbrook hates playing Torrey Craig. Like, and it's weird that he has this kind of success. He is great against smaller guards. If you sick him on a point guard, he will absolutely make their lives miserable. And if you put him at power forward, which Malone never does because he has like a million bigs, but if you put him at power forward, he's actually surprisingly effective because he's big and he's strong and he will absolutely body and he will manage to not give up a foul, you know, doing the dirty work down low. But if you put him on the wing, which is his most natural position, he can't spread the floor and he's high mistake prone. So you're going to have a lot of situations where you're out of position and the other guys have to compensate for him. And that's not something you have. Unless like, if they make like drastic changes, then yeah, I think that could be part of the overall component, especially off the bench. Like, I think that that could work. But as it stands now, I have a hard time thinking that he's a good fit.
Do you think Noah Vonleh maybe is a little bit more of a realistic target for the Cavs? I feel like he might not be long for Denver, and I'm holding out hope that he could maybe be a bit of a reclamation project with actual minutes in Cleveland.
I don't mind that. I think the big thing with him is that you can actually throw lobs to him, and that will work. He's
something Andre Drummond won't do, so fair.
His confidence is really wrecked. Yeah, his confidence is really wrecked right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just really, really wrecked. But, like, if you put – If you give him certain opportunities and let him, especially with the pace that the Cavs play at, I think that would be pretty good. The biggest thing though with like defense is it's all systemic. Like, that's just, it's repetition and age, and then you have to add certain components. But like, there, you know, there are ways to fix the Cavs defense that don't include personnel upgrades, even though you will need personnel upgrades to get good. You can get better, and it'll be easier if you fix the scheme and then add better guys to it.
Matt, we'll kind of wrap up on this question here. If you're Evan and I, you're thinking about the Cavs, what is one thing you would say that when you, if you think about them, and I would not blame you very much if you don't think about them very much, but if you're thinking about them as like a way to step forward next year, what is a way that that is actually possible for them? If you're looking at 2020 or whenever they play again, no one knows really. Let's just say December. What is a way this franchise can actually take a step forward and not be like a bottom three team next year and instead be like, you know, maybe bottom eight instead of bottom three?
I mean, look, the easy ones are all the trades, right? Like, you just need to be, you need to be shopping everybody that's over the age of 25, and you need to really kind of be maximizing all of those assets. And that means, and like the team in general has been reluctant to let go of remnants from 2016, right? Because, and I get why, I totally get why, but I do think that like, and most of them are gone now, like most of them are gone. I would be looking to, I don't think that the goal needs to be getting better next year. I think that part of the idea is you hit rock bottom and then you're still at the bottom and that's okay. Like, I don't think that you need to have, it doesn't always get to be that you win a title and then you're awful and then, or you're like in the finals and then you're awful and then you're a little bit better and a little bit better and you're back in the playoffs. Like, some teams are able to pull that off, but a lot of them don't. What you want to avoid is kingsdom, right? Like, that's what you want to avoid. You want to avoid kingsdom. And the way that you avoid kingsdom is honestly, it's coaching, which not a great start there. And it's And it's not trying to skip steps. Like, this is the biggest thing. It's just like the last time that they tried rebuilding, Dan Gilbert got, it was personal, and I understand, but I think it's better to be an owner with an ego than one that's just like, I don't care, I'm just here for the money. Like, that's better. But there has to be a balance of like, no. Like, we're going to do things the right way. We're going to hire the like extremely smart people to do this the long way. We're not going to go full process. We're going to try and win games, but we're also not going to, we're not going to mitigate our potential. Like, Memphis, I think, is a really good example of this, where the Justice Winslow trade, like, they're 0-3 to start in the bubble, and they're absolutely tail spinning. But they would be better if they kept Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill. They just would be. They would be way better. They would probably be 2-1 right now if they kept Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill. That's how important what those guys is missing. Like, that's how much that's missing from where they're at right now. But Justice Winslow was the best move for them long term. They weren't going to re-sign Crowder. They weren't going to keep Solo. So they maximized those assets. They were realistic about it, and they went another direction, and they got a long-term asset. And like, that to me is the biggest thing, is it's okay to still be bad at defense. You just want to try and get coaching that's going to instill the right principles and just work very slowly, like base level. Malone did this, where like the first year for Malone was just hammering culture, because the culture was so broken in Denver. Mm-hmm. And then it was, let's play the right way. And then it was, let's win some games. And then it was, let's make the playoffs. Like, the way the Nuggets rebuilt under Malone was honestly the perfect way to go about it. And it's, don't skip steps, take it very slowly, and be patient as hell, and take high risk opportunities when they're presented to you with high upside, low risk opportunities is the name of the game there.
Where does the Drummond trade fit under that equation for you? Is that high risk, low risk? What is that for you?
I think it's, I don't think it's necessarily high risk. I just don't necessarily know what it does for you long-term.
Yeah. It has not aged well already. I don't know how Evan exactly feels, but it's already not aged well at all.
No, it hasn't. I was skeptical of it at the time. I chugged the Kool-Aid after he had that one really good game against the Spurs, and then now that we've been so many months removed, almost 6 months removed from the Cavs at this point, I've soured back on the trade again.
And look, the Cavs have been here before, notably like when they said they were going to make the playoffs last time, they ended up paying Earl Clark and Jarrett Jack and Andrew Bynum, and then were like trading for Luol Deng, who hated every single minute he was with the Cavs.
Spencer Hawes too.
Spencer Hawes running pick and pop with Kyrie was like a blessing that season, but it all was really bad. But Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Before you go, just let everyone know where they can find you and where they can read your work and listen to you and stuff.
Yeah, you can catch me on the Action Network. Download our app. It's the fastest score track that you're going to find, and it's awesome. It's got all my content. You can follow me on Twitter @HPBasketball. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on.